and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev. How are you?
I'm right. Are you better today? Because we had to put off recording yesterday because you were a little bit under the weather. Are you all right, Ben?
Yeah. You remember a few weeks back I got a bug after a day out in London seeing a mate. Yeah. Well, I've finally shaken that off. And then over the weekend, I got COVID.
COVID? Oh, that's a bit retro, mate.
I know, isn't it?
How 2020 of you.
I got the Rona. Yeah.
I thought we'd all moved on from that.
So did I.
Getting next, rickets?
Polio, I think. I couldn't believe it. So, yeah, I was disappointed to have to cancel our little recording session yesterday, but I was on my arse yesterday. I mean, more than usual. So there was one part of my day yesterday, because I still did manage to drag my carcass to work, because apparently having COVID is no longer good enough. You have to sort of be dead now to not come into work. But there was a moment where I had to sit down and wait for someone for 5 minutes because they were running a bit late. And I had nowhere to sit. So I just sat down on the floor, on the pavement, on the concrete. And I just dozed off for a minute or two because I was so tired.
A little postman gnome.
Just had a little kip for 2 minutes. Because I thought, I'm either going to have a little kip or I'm going to have a little cry. So I decided to go for a little kip instead.
Maybe you are. Maybe you did die, Ben. And maybe now Mrs. Ben is doing an impression of you just to keep the thing going. Did you see that thing recently? There was a woman, I think it was in South America somewhere, took her, I think it was her uncle's corpse into a bank to try and give over the illusion that he was still alive so that he could sign over, I think it was an amount, the account or some money. And apparently she was doing this. So, come on, uncle. Come on, let's move the pen together because you're obviously very tired. You're going to get away with that.
I'm surprised she didn't sort of try and control him like a puppet with sort of strings and a pulley system or something. Dear God, she must have been rumbled immediately.
Yeah, I don't think she got away with it for very long. I'd imagine the stink of a corpse would give you away. Fairly quickly, wouldn't it?
Yes, I imagine it would. So, no, thankfully it's not been that drastic. I am still alive. I know my voice might sound a wee bit wonky still, but it really is me, I hope. Yeah.
Well, that's good. I've done my knee in again. I mean, between us, we might as well just do this from some sort of ward next week.
You've managed to hurt your knee. Is it just one of those things you've woken up with, or did you actually do something? Or
no, I just started hurting. I'm going to call it middle-age-itis. I've reached that age where I think every day the body just goes, let's give you a pain here today, which is the knee today. All I've got now is it's one pain that shifts around the body.
Right.
That's what happens when you reach your mid-40s. I've decided that now. And then there'll be new bits of your body you didn't know could hurt, but they do now hurt. And they'll have their little turn where the body goes, you have no pain in that bit of your back before. Let's give you that today. Yes, that's a new pain you can endure for a couple of days.
I actually think that waking up with injuries that you didn't actually cause is quite a statement of being middle-aged. Bending over and making noises, standing up from a chair and making noises.
I get up out of a chair in installments now.
Well, I don't mean to sound pessimistic, and I feel like I might have said this to you before recently, but I think you're pushing it to be describing yourself as middle-aged, because if this is the middle of your life, you're being ambitious that you're going to live till at least 92.
Well, you never know, do you? You never know. I mean, chance is a fine thing, but
you've not got too many more years of being able to say middle age, I think, before you're in your early old age.
Yeah, but I don't think you can say that because you don't know how long you're going to live. You know, you can't say, oh, you're middle aged. It's just a generic term for where I'm at. And I would suggest middle age now lasts probably for the next 5 or 6 years. I don't know when you can say you're past the middle age phase. I guess, what, early 50s? That's not quite old age. What's the next phase? What comes after middle age? Three-quarter age? That's not a term, is it?
No, there isn't really. I mean, I suppose no one really cares about people of that generation. They've already written them off.
Yeah, and yet they're the most valuable assets to society in many ways. They've got the knowledge, they've got experience, and yet we just write them off. They're in their 50s. That's the problem, you see. When you work for companies, you see this all the time, certainly in the industry I've worked in for a long time, radio, is you see older people being shipped out and then younger people who can come in and do it basically for cheap being brought in. I was listening to an interview with Frank Skinner who's just been taken off his radio show. I think he's still got a few more shows to go. He's not really been given a reason why they're kicking it off. And he was asked, is it to do with age? He said, well, I don't know. They've not said anything. And you think, this is Frank Skinner. Are they saying you no longer have an audience? That is a legitimate reason, I suppose, if the audience figures aren't there. But by God, we continue with fuck all. But, yeah, you know, it's like, you can't write someone off just because they've reached a certain age. I would hope that's not the reason Absolute Radio have said, oh, it's time for Frank Skinner to move on. I'd hope Absolute Radio will be better than that. But just knowing how companies work, and not just radio, companies across the board work, they see someone of a certain age. And it's an arbitrary thing. They suddenly go, oh, yeah, no, you're probably too old now. It's not like a thing where they go, it's a policy. It's like they just suddenly look at someone and go, oh God, you suddenly look a bit old. Right, yeah, time to move you on.
I think given the shift he's put in, on its own is reason enough to be given a legitimate explanation as to why you're being not renewed. And also, who are you going to replace Frank Skinner with? He's a national treasure.
Yeah, and I don't know.
I think, personally, pun intended, it's an absolute disgrace.
It is. Let's start a petition. I'd imagine that his fan base have already got a petition going, but the decision's been made. He's not going to be saved, is he? They've made their mind up. But I don't know why they do it. I don't know why they do it. But let's not get into all that. That's rather. I could do a whole podcast about moaning about the way radio stations treat people.
So on a lighter note, how's the rest of your week been? Injuries and health ailments aside, how's it been going?
It's all right. I had an exciting night at the weekend where I played a board game that I've played before, but we ramped it up another level.
So I'm getting retro illnesses and you're playing retro games. When was the last time anyone played a board game?
It's not a retro game, mate. These are a new generation of board games. I have games nights with friends, sort of, every few months we get together. And we've played all kinds of more modern board games. And they are incredible. This one's called Arkham Horror. It's based on the stories, I think, of the monsters of H.P. Lovecraft. And I'm not that au fait with all of that side of things, but you basically got, it's a kind of a monster hunt, and you have to fight the monsters and try and get through. But it's such an amazingly intricate game. I have to admit, I sit there for most of it going, I do not know what's going on. I have absolutely no idea what I'm doing. I've got these cards. I have to rely on generally the younger people to tell me what to do. And it's like a film script. The people that create these games, it's like a whole film script. I think you've got to be super intelligent to come up with these games. I think my brain is, I'm not a strategic person. And a lot of these newer board games are very much strategy games. And I think I'm just not very good at them. Normally, by the end of the game, I've worked out how to play it, but by that point someone else has won.
Yes, I know what you mean. If any game needs about 3 hours of explanation and explaining and reading of the rule book before you begin, that's going to put me off. Speaking of H.P. Lovecraft, I remember that you and I did a game in Bermondsey, an escape game.
We did, yeah.
And that was all based on, I think he was a super fan of H.P. Lovecraft, so he made this escape game based on sort of the H.P. Lovecraft universe. And I walked into that escape game having never heard of H.P. Lovecraft, and he had obviously, like I say, been this super fan.
Yeah.
So it all made perfect sense to him. But to me, it was like a complete enigma what the hell this game was all referring to.
It was a complicated escape room. We didn't succeed that one, did we? I think he even gave us more time.
Yeah.
We still didn't work out. But I do like a good board game. You know, when you get into them, and as I say, the people that make them are just so incredibly clever, and they're so enjoyable to play once you get going. But it got me thinking about the board games that I used to play as a kid. I tell you one game I loved as a kid, and I don't think it's available now. I'm not even sure what it was. It might have just simply been called the Incredible Hulk game, right?
Okay.
And I know this is more of a kid's game, but I love this game. And if it's available anywhere, I'd like to get it. And I don't know what you had to, I presume you had to throw a dice. I don't really remember the mechanics of the game, apart from the fact you had to build a building. You had these sort of plastic blocks to build sort of four walls and a roof. But if you made the Hulk angry, I don't know what you did to enrage the Hulk in the game. Presumably it was on the roll of a dice. There was like a model of the Hulk on, those race cars you used to have as a kid where you sort of had to pull them back a few times to get the power and then you let go of them.
I don't know, sort of charge up the wheels. Yeah.
Yeah, charge up. It's that sort of thing. She had to charge the Hulk up and then let him go. And then he'd just rampage around the board and knock buildings down and damage your buildings. And I love that game.
Yeah, that does sound fun. I imagine it would get a little bit annoying if you're putting the finishing touches onto your house and then you've got to start all the way back at the beginning.
Oh, that's the idea of the game. You've got to hope, because it's always very arbitrary. The Hulk will just move in whatever direction nature takes it in. So it could knock your house down even if you've done nothing wrong. But that was part of the jeopardy of the game, I suppose.
The one board game I remember, because I'm more of a video game child, and I still am a video game child, but the one I really remember playing was a game called Nightmare.
Was that based on the TV show?
It could have been, I'm not sure, because there was a video element to it. I can't really remember how the actual board game worked, but you were supposed to, you know, get around the board, answer questions, turn cards over, do all this stuff. It was quite straightforward. But you'd have to insert, now this is going to age us, a VHS cassette into a VCR, connect that to your TV and watch this really slow, long video, which was basically a 90-minute, if I remember correctly, maybe a 60-minute timer, and you had to beat the game, the board game, by the end of the timer. It was kind of a before-its-time escape game kind of thing.
I've got a feeling I've had a conversation. Either I'm having a massive moment of déjà vu right now, or I've had a similar conversation with someone else recently about this very game.
It could well have been me, because we tend to forget what we've talked about, and frankly, at the moment, I'm off my tits on data, so I could be repeating myself.
I think I had this conversation with somebody else recently. I was definitely in someone else's flat recently. We were definitely talking about Nightmare, because we were talking about kids' TV shows, we remember, and I'm sure this game came up, unless, as I say, I might be having a massive moment of deja vu, but maybe this game was more popular than I, because I'd never heard of this game. I mean, I remember the TV show, but never the game. But no, so that sounds a brilliant game.
It was great. You had to pull the curtains in the living room, so it got nice and dark, turn the volume up on the TV, and then you'd officially hit play to start the game. And then this eerie, weird-looking, hooded, creepy old man would give you your instructions, and then you'd start to play the game, and it would play this sort of creepy ambient music. The time is ticking, you're trying to get around the board, and then every now and again, out of fucking nowhere, this guy would just appear jump scare style on the screen and shout "Stop!" and you know shit yourself, and then you'd have to listen to whatever bizarre twist or turn he instructed you to do with your next few turns. It was terrifying, but it was brilliant.
Definitely based on the game show, that, because that used to have the sort of hooded character was the main man, I'm sure.
Thing is, I'd love to. I would genuinely play that. I think you and I can have a great evening in, because this is the sort of old man status we've got. We can't afford to go to the pub anymore with the prices they are. But if I could get my hands on this game, we could have an evening in and play this game together. But the only problem is I don't have a fucking VCR. So I don't know how we're going to get around that little problem.
Well, the good news is, because I've just done a search for this, just to double down on, I think it is based on the TV show, but I think it's on YouTube. I've just come across this thing, Nightmare, the VHS board game stream.
Oh.
So we could do it, Ben. You thought you could throw that away. Oh, we could have a great evening playing this game, thinking, well, it's never going to happen, because, I mean, I could tell you that I've still got access to a VHS machine.
Of course you do. I imagine you've got a fax machine and a you know, an abacus, and I'm sure any sort of old technology you could pull out from somewhere in your house.
I've still got a VHS machine. It's not in my house at the moment. It's in my dad's house, but it still works. So if we could find the VHS, we could do that. But otherwise, it looks like it's on YouTube, mate. So I'm looking forward to that evening when we do that game.
Mind you, we'd still need to source the actual the board, wouldn't we? And all the cards.
Oh, well, yes. I hadn't thought that bit through.
No, you don't just sit there waiting to be jump scared. There is a game to play.
It'll be on eBay. We could probably get on eBay between us, Ben. We could probably fork out and get the game and then watch the stream. I'm determined to make this happen now. Now that you've mentioned it, we are going to have an evening at some point doing the Nightmare board game, and I'm very much looking forward to it. I mean, obviously the king of the board games was Mousetrap.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how satisfying, but also how frustrating when you'd accidentally nudge the board and everything would start going off at once when you didn't need it to or want it to, and you had to reset everything.
We bought a more modern version a few years ago for a Christmas, like, family get-together, and it wasn't as good as I remembered. I don't think it had the diving man. Back in the day, wasn't there a diving board?
Yes, there was, yeah.
I don't think the newer board had the diving man, which was quite disappointing.
Well, there was always the element that the diving man might miss, and that's why it was all the more satisfying when the diving man landed his jump.
Oh, because he would set off the next thing. Because he was almost at the end, wasn't he? So if he hit his mark, is that when it caught the mouse?
From memory, and then it would rattle into this sort of shaky pole, and then that would knock the basket loose, which would then rattle its way down the pole and then trap the mouse.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, that was a great game. My nan and granddad had that, and I used to love playing that. That would come out sort of very often around their house. Same with Kaplunk. They had Kaplunk.
Can I just, before we get onto Kaplunk, can I just say the sort of poetry of you loving to play Mousetrap as a child, and now in the real world you get to sort of play the live action role playing Mousetrap.
I suppose a little update, two more caught this week.
Nice work. Heads on spikes, I hope, to scare off the others. Send a strong message.
I tell you, I lined them up outside. I thought if I could get like a nice number and just line them up, then there's a real message being sent, isn't there? It's just a whole sort of raft of mouse corpses. That's very exciting.
Kaplunk, yes.
I mean, a very simple game, but that was, I used to love that game.
To be honest, with Kaplunk, which was, for anyone who is unfamiliar with Kaplunk, it's basically a cylinder full of sticks that sliced through it. You
like
throw
spaghetti.
Some marbles. Yeah, you throw some marbles on top, and then the person who pulls out the stick that causes all the marbles to fall to the bottom has lost. So it was fun the first 2 to 3 times I played it. After that, the novelty quite quickly wore off. It wasn't much challenge. It was more random chance, wasn't it?
It was sort of the Jenga of its day.
Yes, I suppose. The other thing is, speaking of games that disappointed me, you mentioned it earlier on, Monopoly.
I can't stand Monopoly, I must admit.
Now, I think it's an okay game, and I think there's a bit of strategy to it. You can't just dumb luck your way through it. You need to be a bit smart about it. But the thing I hate about Monopoly is the slow death. As you know, for about 45 minutes in advance, before it happens, you've lost. And you're forced to keep rolling the dice until you are officially declared bankrupt. And, you know, it's clear at a certain point, someone's got all the properties, all the hotels, I'm fucked, but I have to keep playing until I'm out of money.
I mean, I ended up playing Monopoly once and running out of money very quickly and paying my fines in drinking. So they would say to me, oh, you know, you've landed on why don't you down a pint of Scrumpy? And I just end up getting incredibly pissed.
Well, that would at least take the edge off the slow death of losing Monopoly. But it just struck me as such a bad design that you have to go through that. Because obviously, if you just say to someone, listen, I'm clearly beaten here, you've obviously won, can we just declare you the winner so we can stop the inevitable? Then you'll look like a spoil sport, won't you?
Yes, but that's part of the fun of Monopoly, in that eventually you just fucking turn the board over and go, screw this shit and fuck you all. Ben, here's a question for you.
Go on.
If you were to have an emotional support animal, what animal would you have?
Oh, I think there is nothing quite as lovely as a dog. It's not probably the most interesting off the cuff, wacky answer you might have been hoping for. But I found when I had dogs, they would be such a de-stressor, such a joy that, yeah, has to be a dog. Why? What would you have?
Apparently pigs are very good as an emotional animal to have around. You know, that sort of, they're very loving, they can be. They're very intelligent animals, aren't they?
So I hear, yeah. Delicious too.
Well, that's the other side, isn't it? Like, if you get fed up with it, like with a dog, it's frowned upon to kill and eat a dog in most countries around the world anyway.
Yes.
But with the pig, like if I had a pig in the garden for a little while and I just found, well, actually, it's not providing me with the emotional support I was hoping for, I'd just stick it on the barbecue. And, that would certainly cheer me up. Stick that on. I'd like to get one of those proper old spits as well. I'd have that at the side, just a little warning to the pig, just so it doesn't take me for granted. Keep that emotional support at a high here, Mr. Pig.
But what is it a pig is going to deliver? I mean, I know they're quite cute and you can probably have a bit of a cuddle, but I don't see what else pigs do.
Apparently, they are just a good source of comfort.
Really?
Pigs in blankets is a comfort food. No. There's a reason I got into this, by the way. There's a reason. I'm not just asking this just off the top of my head. There is a reason I got into this because, as always, I ended up going down several internet rabbit holes this week. It all started because I read a story about a man who had an emotional support alligator.
That sounds like a recipe for disaster. Don't try and hug alligators. Bad news.
That's the thing. I don't know what emotion... Well, I suppose there's emotional support in that maybe you feel secure having an alligator. I mean, an alligator is probably a better guard dog than a dog.
No, but you say that. I recently saw a clip of, I think it was on TikTok, of a dog that, it was in Florida, because of course it was, a dog running up to the glass window and barking at either an alligator or a crocodile, I'm not entirely sure which one it was. And this thing, it turned and, have you ever seen Kermit the Frog run in a panic?
What, with his arms like flailing around?
Yes, this great big dinosaur thing, prehistoric creature, was so terrified by this tiny little dog barking at it, it whistled back down the garden into whatever swamp it came from. It was the best thing. So I think still go with a dog. If it can scare off your emotional alligator, I'll have my emotional dog.
Mind you, have you seen that other video? And that's, I think, that again in Florida, a man's little dog being taken by an alligator.
Oh no.
But the old man, he goes in and prizes the jaws open of the alligator and gets the dog back. It's a victory for the man and dog over
the
alligator.
That's incredible, because an alligator's jaws produce like thousands of pounds worth of pressure. Mm. So to be able to just pry that apart is quite incredible.
It's quite a fight. I think his arm was injured in the fight. The weird thing is, I say alligators might be good for security. This man's support alligator has been stolen.
Oh no.
You've got to be some burglar to come up with that idea, haven't you? We're going to steal. Well, what are you going to do with it once you've stolen it? Make it a handbag?
I don't know. So someone knew this guy had a crocodile and broke it and stole it?
An alligator.
Sorry, because there is a difference.
There is a difference.
Why?
Well, no one knows. He's put out an appeal. Please help me get my guy. Because it's a famous alligator as well. Apparently, it was the model alligator for... I've not heard of this film. There's a film called Loki. It's a Disney film. And there's an alligator in that, and it was modelled on this support alligator. And maybe it was just the fame of this alligator made it a target.
I understand why, if there's some very valuable jewellery, you might want to steal that because you can make a profit out of it because it's very valuable jewellery. But if it's a very famous, very valuable crocodile, how are you going to sell that on? Because then everyone's going to say, well, that's the missing famous crocodile, isn't it?
Boy, no, you say that. I don't think. Because I reckon if I was to go and steal an alligator and take it to an alligator dealer, right, so down the back streets of Croydon, that's where they lurk, they wouldn't recognise it and say, oh, that's the famous alligator. I don't think you'd be able to distinguish one alligator from another.
Surely, of all people, an alligator dealer would be familiar with the world's most famous alligator.
Yeah, but would it really be able to tell that that's the alligator without any...
Well, then it begs the question, what if even the expert dealer can't tell, what was the point of nicking that one? Just go into the Everglades and scoop out another one.
No, but maybe this was just easy pickings to sell to an alligator dealer. You haven't got to go into a swamp. It's just, I'm assuming it was kept in sort of some sort of caged area within the man's home property.
You haven't thought this through at all. Pickings. It's not easy pickings because you're stealing the most famous alligator in Florida.
Yeah, but this is going to be tattooed on it.
Media, the news outlets are going to be on it. Journalists, but Twitter. People are going to be looking at TikTok. It's going to make big news. And it's going to be all over the place. Whereas if you just bothered to go to the effort of scooping up one from the Everglades, you could have sold that. Probably no one would have even noticed it was missing.
You've got to take into account this one might be slightly more tamed. It might be easier to grab, and I still maintain that even with all the media attention, if you had a buyer for it, they're not going to say, oh well, that's the famous one, we won't be taking that, because they're not going to be able to tell. No one can tell.
Well,
unless
it's
microchipped. Would you microchip a gator?
I don't know. I imagine probably some sort of ankle tag might be better, but yeah, you don't. Again, why would you steal? Why would you steal a gator or a with GPS? Why would you do that? Because then they're going to lead the police straight to you.
So I think if it was microchip, that would be a bad move on the behalf of the stealing party.
Yes.
So
if the dealer has obtained this very famous and possibly microchipped alligator, my advice would be sell it and make it snappy.
Oh, very good. Thank you.
Yeah.
But anyway, as I say, this led me down a couple of rabbit holes, this whole story. So one was about emotional support animals, and these are animals that people actually have as emotional support animals. So we've already done pigs. Turkeys.
An emotional support turkey.
People say that they are the perfect companion for those who could use some emotional support. There was even a case recently where somebody had one on an aeroplane. They were allowed to board the plane because it was their therapeutic companion. They could get on the plane with their turkey. I mean, imagine just the noise. Imagine that for hours on end on a flight. You'd hope that was just an internal flight, a couple of hours. Imagine doing long haul with every few fucking minutes.
One of your better impressions, that trip. But
fucking hell, give me some fucking bread sauce. I'm pressing that button all the time.
I would say, though, I'm a big fan of I was going to say I'm a big fan of birds. Makes me sound like some kind of 70s lech. Ducks, I love. I could spend a whole day by the water watching the ducks. But nothing makes me happier. I'm becoming an old man before my time. But the one thing I have noticed about the ducks is that, and I think it applies to chickens, and I think it applies to turkeys, they have basically zero control over their bowels.
Well, of course. I mean, because they're just out there in nature. They haven't got time to be thinking about that sort of thing.
Yeah, they don't ever sort of wander off for a bit of privacy and take a discreet toilet break. And no, it basically will just fly out of them, seemingly by the minute. And if you spook them, then let's just hope you're undercover.
I've told you this story before about my nan and aunt had a duck when they were little, and it ate a bit of soap and then was blowing bubbles from its behind.
That's amazing.
That's
so yeah,
I'm sorry.
So the noise, could you give us the noise again? Yeah, that. And the endless shitting. If you were in the next seat to that person, I imagine that would become a 9-hour flight. That could get quite old quite quickly.
Kangaroos. The thing about kangaroos, I think kangaroos are quite frightening. Have you seen those? Like, some of them are really buff.
Yes, they look like they've been lifting weights for all their life. They're ripped.
And they get up and they want a box. So I think, I don't know how emotionally supportive, I'd be terrified all the time that it's going to turn on me. I think the idea, if you're going to have an emotional support animal from Australia, go with the koala.
Yes, they're very cute and cuddly, but I've heard they're all usually riddled with syphilis.
Well, yes, but I live in Croydon. Most people aren't. Get away with it. I tell you what I'd love. I tell you that I think this would be the perfect emotional support animal. A sloth. Don't
Why?
You just think sloths, they are just the most amazing creature. They look like they're just smiling at you all the time. They just sort of have a grin on their face the whole time. Everything's done in slow motion, and they're just so soothing. To have a sloth in the garden, I think if ever I was feeling a bit tense, I could just go out, see the sloth. Because I feel like a sloth emotionally, metaphorically, spiritually, it slows everything down just by its slowness. So I think you'd go out, you might be tense, you're going, oh, fucking hell, stop, it's all happening. And then within moments, you're going, Oh, hello, Sloth. I'm feeling much better.
I would much rather sit next to someone on a plane with an emotional support dog, a lovely, gorgeous golden Labrador. If I sat down to you and you were either a turkey or a sloth, and it is kind of discrimination, I suppose, because they're still animals, but I think I would be a bit more inclined to ask to see your papers, please. This is my emotional support sloth. Is it, sir? Get off the plane.
All right, well, look, how about this? A llama. Now, llamas are quite nice animals, aren't they?
Aren't they just kind of like big goat things?
So, yeah. Yeah, they're sort of large. I always think they're
like
sort of
a cross between a goat and a camel.
Yeah, I always think they're sort of in between a goat and a camel. But I think they're lovely animals. They've got a very calm nature.
Don't they? I know camels spit, but llamas spit as well, don't they? Or
I
can
think they
do.
They can if you upset them, but, you know, don't upset them.
But I don't know what sort of arbitrary rules that the llama has about me not upsetting it. Because horses kick sometimes.
Oh, you don't never walk behind a horse. I think that's very, very dangerous. But they bite as well. My brother was bitten by a horse many years ago.
So and did he do anything to offend it?
No, I don't think so. But it just decided it was going to take a little lump out of him.
I think in general, they're quite good. But when they go rogue and when they bolt, there is just no stopping it. And it's a bit of a bone of contention with me and Mrs. Ben because she loves horses and she sees me, you know, she'll say, oh, stop the car, there's a horse.
Yeah.
And then she'll want to go and have a cuddle with it. And she gets very cross with me when I won't get anywhere nearer than sort of about 18 feet. Because I know, I've seen these fuckers kick people for no reason. I've seen them, you know, just ask your brother. I've seen them bite people for no reason. And they're enormous. And some genius had the idea of nailing iron to their feet. So that when they kick you, they're that much likely to kill you.
So you wouldn't have a... Because the horses are on the list of support animals. I think a friend of mine had a horse for a long time and it gave her a lot of joy and comfort in times of trouble, I think.
Well, just going back to your aeroplane train of thought.
Mm.
Now, whenever my last flight, I was coming back from Gibraltar to Heathrow and I don't know how we managed to do it, but we must have picked up a few extra bits whilst we were out there. And my luggage allowance was ever so slightly over. So we'd obviously gone a gram or two over and they'd said, oh, well, you know, you are actually over the limit. We could charge you for this. And I said, I'm really sorry. We must have bought a little bit more than we were realizing. And they said, oh, you know what? Don't worry about it. Just get on. And we said, oh, thank you very much. That's fine. If I'd got on that flight and seen someone in an aisle seat with a stallion, I'd have thought, hang on a minute, are you paying the extra weight allowance for this fucking horse, or is there an exception? Because I could say, my suitcase identifies as an animal, and my suitcase is my emotional support animal. Therefore, all the luggage inside it is free.
Now, presumably, if you're taking a horse on an aeroplane, you have to buy a seat for the horse. You can't, like a turkey. I mean, I don't know whether that person had to buy a ticket for the turkey, because I mean, at least a turkey you could hold
and
it could sit on your lap. But a
so
horse,
could a dog.
I don't even think a horse on a plane is an option. I don't even know what we're talking about getting a horse on a plane. Even if you bought a seat for a horse, that's not going to be enough room for the horse. The aisle itself on an aeroplane is probably not wide enough for a horse to comfortably get through. So you're going to have to take seats out.
Well, what are the ones? Are they Shetland ponies?
Oh, well, yeah, Shetland pony. Or there's miniature horses. Yeah, you could perhaps take a small horse on a plane.
But if it's genuinely your licensed emotional support animal, then surely it shouldn't matter if it's a goldfish or a Clydesdale horse. If that's your emotional support animal, as signed off by the doctor, then I'm sorry, they need to make room for it on my flight home.
What's a Clydesdale horse?
Oh, Google it. They're the biggest ones.
Are they? Because there's those... what are those big ones with, like, flared trousers on? Do you know the ones I mean?
I think they were around in the 70s, weren't they?
Yeah, they used to always pull, like, beer crates around. What are they called? Oh, that's going to annoy me. But yeah, they're lovely horses, but they're massive. But
I think if you have a bit of a Google, I think I might have just told you the name of the thing you're describing. Sorry if you heard me typing away in the background there, but if you Google Clydesdale horse, it does have a particular 70s... flair to the leg.
Yeah, maybe that is. I'm sure they had another name. I don't know why we're getting into like horse breeding. This is like
well, you asked.
Well, no, it's fascinating, isn't it? The horses
only to flared. Us, mate. Only to us.
They would have flared trousers. That's quite an exciting thing. A Shire horse. That's the one I was thinking of. A Shire horse. They must be very similar to the Clydesdale because they definitely have got flared trousers.
Well, there's another mystery solved. A mystery that no one needed solving.
Well, I don't know. I'm sure somebody somewhere would have been thinking, if we'd not solved that issue, somebody somewhere may have left this podcast unfulfilled. And God forbid that should happen. So anyway, alongside my little rabbit hole about emotional support animals, because the alligator had been stolen, I then ended up going down a little rabbit hole of the weirdest things ever stolen.
Right.
If you question why people would steal an alligator, try some of these for size. A train engine.
Now, is this the sort of thing that... Because, I mean, I think probably in my youth, and I think this is not an uncommon thing, a teenage boy had a few drinks, you go out with your mates, get a bit daft, and you might end up home the next morning and wake up and there's a traffic cone by your bed.
Yeah.
But stealing a train engine, surely that's going to take some... lifting.
Well, they disassembled it piece by piece.
And, that isn't someone on the lash then, is it?
How long must it take to dismantle a diesel engine? Because surely, even if you start that under the cover of darkness, you're not going to have completed the job by daylight, are you? Surely at some point someone's going to come and go, excuse me, lads. Are you qualified and certified to be disassembling the diesel engine? I suppose it's a thing that if you're wearing a high-vis jacket, you can get away with anything.
It was a slightly scary thing a while ago. I saw a YouTube video of someone proving that with a high-vis jacket and holding a ladder, you can basically get into any venue, any VIP.
Yeah.
No matter what the security is, if you're in a high-vis jacket holding a ladder or a clipboard, they'll wave you through.
I know. So a little tip there for anyone looking to get their hands on a full-size engine. It'd be easy to do. I don't know if they ever found the engine. I don't know that bit. We never find out whether it was found.
So I can only assume they're selling it for scrap then.
You'd have thought they're just selling the metal. Because people do steal all kinds of things for metal, don't they? I mean, and evil things as well, right? And my local crematorium years ago, and we had some stolen from our family's sort of rose bushes, stole all the metal plaques.
Oh, how classy.
Why would you do that? What is wrong with these people? I mean, it's bad enough you're thinking of going out stealing to start with, but then to do that...
Aren't some people absolute shitheads? I mean, how do you put your head on the pillow at the end of the day and thought, well, what did I achieve today? I went around and I upset many families of the deceased by stealing their lovely plaques. Good night, dickhead.
Someone's once stole a bridge, a 60-foot steel bridge.
A bridge?
Yes.
And no one noticed?
Well, again, you've got to think, at what point does someone question it? But apparently it was a whole gang that included some government workers, and they were there for 3 days. And I suppose when anyone asked, they just say, oh, well, we've got government officials here. So they were all in on it.
Wow. And did they get caught? What do they want with it?
Well, it all went to scrap dealers.
Why would government officials risk their job being on this heist? It's not like you get millions and millions of pounds for little bits of scrap metal, is it?
I don't know. I mean, people, metal's got a lot of value, and maybe in a little place in India, perhaps they're not paid a lot of money, even if they are government workers.
I assumed this was in this country. That makes a bit more sense now.
Okay. No. An iceberg.
Now, can this be stolen? Because who owns it?
Well, this was a man who was arrested for stealing and smuggling 5 tons of ice from the... I don't know how you say this. I think it's the Jorge Mont Glacier.
Right.
Got it all in a truck. He was intercepted by police. It was supposedly worth over $6,000. I mean, how are you keeping it frozen if you're going into a hotter climb anyway? But I suppose you're right. I mean, who does own an iceberg? Presumably, if it comes from the waters under a country's jurisdiction, does the iceberg legally belong to that nation?
Maybe that's the case. I suppose if it's not in international waters, then it might fall under the country that's closest to its ownership. So it'd be you versus that government. But like you say, it's not the smartest thing to do if you're driving into a hotter climate, because what you've done there is you've left with many bags of ice and then you've arrived with a portable swimming pool.
But there are refrigerated trucks, aren't there? I'm imagining it's in a refrigerated truck of some sort. The idea was...
this man just happened to have... a refrigeratable, freezable truck.
5 tons is a lot to have in one.
Yes, it is.
I don't know what load a truck can take. But I suppose you've got to be organised if you're stealing 5 tons of iceberg. Apparently, this sort of high-end ice, that's how it's described, high-end ice, can be sold for quite a lot of money to bars. For like, you can say, oh, this is gourmet polar ice cubes. And they're worth quite a lot of money.
I'm just trying to work out what the average transit van can hold. And I'm finding the top limit is front drive wheel payload, blah, blah, blah. Capacity of top 1,279 kilograms. So 1,279 kilograms in tons.
It's 1.279 tons, surely.
You're absolutely right. You'd need 4 transit vans just to carry 5 tons of
ice. This is a truck. I mean, a truck's bigger than a transit van, is it? I don't know the exact spec of the truck.
Was it a monster truck?
Right, one more weird theft. I think this tops the chart for weird thefts. By the way, I did have another one that could have topped the charts for weird thefts. Einstein's brain was supposedly stolen.
Einstein's brain?
Well, it was actually taken by the man who did the autopsy on Einstein. He got fired from his job for taking the brain, even though he said he had permission from Einstein's son to study his brain. And he chopped it up into lots of pieces and did study it. And it's been, I think it's still being studied. I think bits of his brain are still being studied to this day. So when I say it was stolen, he did have permission, apparently, from Einstein's son.
Is this man still alive? Have we just committed libel on this podcast?
I don't think he's still alive. No, I think he's fine.
Fine. Yeah. Because if you've had permission, that isn't theft, is it? Still a weird thing to do.
Yeah, but his employers obviously didn't feel that the permission he had was enough and fired him from his job. So they must have had some grounds to believe that permission hadn't been granted. Maybe we don't know the full facts there either. There's a bit of ambiguity around that information, really. But here's the weirdest one. I think this tops the charts of weirdest things ever stolen. I'll say this very delicately. Napoleon's manhood.
Not Napoleon's Bonaparte.
Yes. When he died, there was always speculation about what happened to many of his body parts, including that particular part. And according to some accounts, it was either his doctor or his priest was responsible for removing that part during the autopsy. And it was then allegedly stolen by Napoleon's chaplain, who smuggled it back to his home in Corsica, where it remained under the protection of his family until 1916, before it was sold. I mean, this is the weird thing. It was sold to a book-selling company based in London. I mean, what sort of publishing company thinks, oh, I'll tell you what we need to add to our portfolio, the private member of a French emperor.
Why a book publishing company? Were they hoping to sort of leather-bound it to a book? I mean...
Or maybe use the... You know, they used to bind books in human skin. Maybe there was enough on there to bind a tome. I don't...
Mazel tov, Napoleon.
Well, there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Before we go, as always, some recommendations. What you got for us this week, Ben?
Just the one this week from me. It's a podcast. It's Russell Howard's Wonderbox. It's a sort of thinly veiled premise for a podcast of what are the sort of greatest things in your life that you would put in this box. So not really a lot of thought goes into the premise, but that's fine. But the real highlight is episode 15, which is, I know he's a big hero of yours, Greg Davis.
Yes.
The Taskmaster.
I'll listen to anything with Greg Davis in. He's probably one of the... I often wonder And I don't ever question that he's making stuff up, but how so much stuff has happened to Greg Davis in his life that gives him so many incredible stories.
It is really, really funny listen. And some, like you say, he often does throughout the podcast say, I swear to you, this is true.
Yeah, and I believe him.
And so do I. And the stories he tells regarding his dad and some of the pranks he was unwittingly a victim of is absolutely brilliant listening. So Wonderbox is a great podcast on its own, but specifically episode 15, Greg Davis, highly recommend.
Well, I'm going to definitely listen to that. I'm looking forward to that. I've got three things to recommend this week. I'm going to start off with two comedies, both on the BBC iPlayer. One's called Mammoth. It's a new comedy starring Mike Bubbins, who's a Welsh comedian, who over the last 2 or 3 years I've got to know his work a little bit more, and I think he's absolutely hilarious. He plays one of the characters on the Beef and Dairy Network podcast, which I absolutely love, and he's just fantastic on that. And basically the premise of this series is he's a 1970s PE teacher who gets buried in an avalanche in 1975 and then revived in modern day, and it's sort of seeing him with all his 1975 attitudes trying to survive in 2024.
That sounds good.
There's only three episodes. Whether it's going to go to a full series, I have to say, although I've really enjoyed it, I think it's really good. You do wonder how long that joke can go on. So you do think, probably maybe they'll go to one full series, and then you think that might be all there is. But I tell you who else is in it, is the butler from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh no, I can't remember his actor's name, but I know he played Jeffrey in The Fresh Prince.
Yeah, so he's in it and he plays a great character in that. So anyway, that's on the BBC iPlayer. And the other thing I'm going to recommend is a thing called Things You Should Have Done. This is fantastic. It's a comedy by a fairly new, I say fairly new, she's been going a little while, but she found her fame on YouTube, Lucia Keskin. And this is her sort of first major series. She plays this pretty stupid late teenager whose parents are killed, and it's just watching her trying to survive and her mad family around her. And basically the things she should have done are the things her parents have said, these are the things you should have done by now. And it's just her navigating. It's really good. And I think the longer you go through the series, I think it's six episodes, it just gets better, I think, because you've got to get to know the characters and their foibles. And anyway, I really enjoyed it. That's on the BBC iPlayer. And the last thing I'm going to recommend is, you know, I like my true crime stuff, Ben.
As do I.
There's a series on Channel 4, just the three episodes, called Murder Case, The Digital Detectives. And it follows all the detectives on murder cases and just using all the digital information to prove who done it.
Lovely. And do we get a nice resolution at the end of the episodes?
Yeah, I've watched two of them so far, and yes, you get a resolution. I think they were filmed quite a while ago, but obviously there's probably been a lot of legal stuff to go before getting them on. But it's just I'm just fascinated by the way these people can use information from phones that are completely smashed up, or, you know, just all the information they can gather to piece together where people were, what they're up to. I find it fascinating, and I just think this series is fantastic. So that's on Channel 4, so that's well worth a watch.
Yeah, I think the days of being a sort of 90s drug dealer and you could just snap your flip phone in half and throw it into the river and you'll be untraceable, I think those days now are long behind us, where you're pretty much traced wherever you go, whatever you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, I do feel for the people that have to do this. I mean, there's one incident where the digital forensic detective, or whatever they're called, had to work on a phone that a suspect had hidden up his bottom. You know, that's not a job, is it? That's not a job for the faint-hearted. Let's put it that way.
Well, you know, he's getting paid good money, Trevor. It's not a bum job.
Oh, fuck off, Ben. Right at the end. Right. Anyway, there we are. That's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us anytime about anything. We're at Trevor and Ben on X. And we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.